Hey everyone, Jim Thompson here. Welcome to the Jesus on Display podcast. Before we begin today's content, I wanted to say thank you so much to everybody for supporting us here at Fellowship Greenville with your gifts and your generosity. Because of your giving, we get to share resources like this podcast with you to help reach you wherever you are in your life with Jesus. If you'd like to support the ministry of Fellowship Greenville, you can head to fellowshipgreenville.org/give to get started. Thanks so much for your support, and we hope you enjoy today's episode. Hey, welcome to a Revelation bonus podcast. I think this is our conclusive final thoughts on Revelation. When this is released, it will be so.
Not for our summer.
If you want to keep reading Revelation this summer, that's great. Summer's almost over by the time this comes out. Last night, we did our Revelation bonus night. Charles, I had a great time. I hope you had a great
time. I had a great time. It was over 200 people there or something like that?
I think we might have cracked 300, man. We were moving stanchions.
The whole middle section was populated, and then they had to open the sides and people.
Shoulder to shoulder in the middle section. My mom and dad were there. They were snuggling up against people they didn't know. It was fabulous.
Did they ask a question?
They didn't ask. We had good talks on the way home. I rode with them. So that was really
so
nice.
So what was the night like, guys, for those of us that weren't there? Like just question and answer totally? Did you do some talking at the beginning?
Yeah, Jim kicked us off and he did about a 30-minute orientation to Revelation and symbolism. Mm-hmm. And he threw in some suggestions about good commentaries. And he didn't just name commentaries. He kind of like went through what the commentaries were about and how they approached the text and all that kind of thing. And so I thought that was really good, but his talk about symbolism and how it related to it, in order to understand Revelation, you got to understand the prophets in the Old Testament. And so you can't understand the future without understanding the past.
Yeah.
And that's something that most of us, you know, or many of us don't connect those two, but there's no way to really understand the symbolism of Revelation unless you understand how that same symbolism was used in Eden and in the Exodus and the exile and the prophets and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and
it's not
Jim wrong. Did a great job
it's
on
not
that.
Wrong to read the Bible. Thank you, by the way. It's very kind of you. It's not wrong to read the Bible and think about yourself because you can only live your life. Like, I can't live whoever else's life. But the more healthy, full, appropriate way to go is to go, okay, how was this originally intended? Mm-hmm. Which is always a difficult question, but when you get to the Revelation, it is far more unique and textured because of the symbolism and because they're drawing on those three places, Eden, exile, and Exodus. So the clouds that Jesus is coming on, it's not his vehicle. It's Exodus 19, Mount Sinai. It's Daniel 7. That's exile with the Son of Man coming on the clouds. So it's royal presence and divine arrival. The Lamb, that is the Lamb that was slain. So that, you know, that's Genesis 3. That's Exodus, the tabernacle events in the Torah, and that's the forward-looking lamb of the prophet. So all of these things are looking back in order to look forward. Mm-hmm. And not just looking back, we can all maybe appreciate history, but looking back and seeing pictures and images, mm-hmm. the stained glass window is the thing that I keep going back to. So I thought it was fun to remind people of that. And there are great questions asked, great encouragement.
So he's not riding on literal clouds, mm-hmm. on cumulonimbus with like some rain.
I already called Chris Justice and he said, Chris Justice said no. So
riding on the clouds. It's in the song.
But Jim actually even said cumulonimbus last night.
So. I did. Dude.
I was going to go with Stratus. It's more fun to say.
But Jim had said there's no way that he could ride a Stratus.
It's not. Wow. It's not his style.
Yeah. It'd have to be the big puffy white ones, you know, that kind
of
thing.
It's not his style. I like that.
But he kicked it off and started, uh-huh. by talking about all that kind of thing. And then he brought me up and people could text a number and text questions.
Yeah.
So it wasn't people doing popcorn around the room, popping up and asking a question, sitting back down. Mm-hmm. And so, the questions were really good. And so, I kind of went back over how we approach books of the Bible. And like we're expositional, so we're focused on Revelation. And, you know, like I've said a couple of times in the series and said several times last night, there's no rapture in the book of Revelation. And mm-hmm. I've also said, I'm not saying there isn't a rapture, and you can have an eschatological end time system with charts and everything, And some people place the rapture before what's called the tribulation, and some place it in the middle, and some take it at the end. And just sidebar, interesting, there were people in all of those positions there last night.
Yeah.
And so, but we approach a book by looking first at what did the original author intend to say to the original audience?
Mm-hmm.
And so if John, in writing the book of Revelation, does not talk about a rapture, then there's something that he wants us to take away from the book that's not dependent on a view of a rapture. And so we kind of talked about that for a while, and kind of I just kind of kept coming back and echoing that.
And dude, as somebody who shares a pulpit with you, that's so liberating, because it's we don't have to force the text to say something. Mm-hmm. And as pastors, we want our congregation, we want our people to go read the Bible for what it says. Don't try to superimpose. Don't try to bring stuff to the text. Go, what is said in this book of the Bible for those people to whom it was originally written?
Mm-hmm.
There is a kind of enoughness there that we need to like steep in that is really sweet and beautiful. And that's what I appreciate about our approach, is that we're not trying to roll out some big, dumb, funny charts and be like, "Woo, this is, I'll send you a Google invite for when Jesus promised he would come back." Like, we're not trying to do that, because that's exhausting. And I don't think that's what Scripture calls us to. And so there is a kind of freedom to going, what is being said here in this text?
Mm-hmm.
Which that reminder last night, both in my intro and in your responses to question, I thought was really, really fun.
But we do have big charts once in a while. Well, yeah, not dumb or funny.
If you want to see my end line timeline,
we do have big charts.
Yeah, if you want to see my end time timeline, then you can go to Daniel, the message did on Daniel 9.
End time timeline.
And the 70 weeks and all that kind of thing.
I thought you were getting it put as a mural in your office.
Yeah. And again, even in that timeline, even though I go through the first 69 weeks and the church age and then to the final age, and I divide the 7 years into 3.5 years, you know, like Daniel talks about. On that chart, there's no rapture there, because Daniel doesn't talk about a rapture either. Mm-hmm. Now, there are verses, 1 Thessalonians 4, 1 Corinthians 15, you know, there are the rapture is talked about.
He'll give you all your rapture questions when we do 1 and 2 Thessalonians.
Yeah, I may have a better understanding of my own beliefs when I preach through 1 and 2.
But dude, it's kind of a joke, but that's where I appreciate your honesty, man. And your honesty before the text, I think, is the thing that we're all trying to do, because I think that kind of thing is how the text is, God wants it to give life. So I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Here's my question for you, Matthew.
Yeah.
What's something, just for you personally, that has been a win in our Revelation series? Something where you've been like, never thought about that. I love that. That's a good take.
Well, never thought about that is a lot of it.
All of it. Never thought about that.
I can't really.
The demons in the pit that Densky talked about. Never thought about that.
Yeah, I can't address that one so much. But I do appreciate what you guys are just talking about, the emphasis that, like, our end times views, I think we should hold probably really loosely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's thankfully not something that our church is like built on. Mm-hmm. Like, we have a variety of views in the, in the seats. So I think my favorite, just thread throughout it is like our call to persevere and our call to hold fast is based on Jesus being triumphant and on the throne. And so I think we've been pulling that out of several spots.
Yeah.
And just the, in the middle of all the imagery, just like, okay, notice that Babylon is a system of government and world and culture. And that's what you're in. You're in right now. Don't forget it. So you have to continually fight against that with the kingdom view that Jesus is on his throne. And that's what helps you persevere.
I even love even in Revelation itself, when it talks about the martyrs in chapter 6, 9 through 11, it says that they are slain, and that's the same verb for Jesus as the lamb is slain, and it's saying that his lambness and slainness is going to be descriptive of you too. Like, that's, you're supposed to lean into that and live into that and not be ashamed and not love your life unto death. Like, you know, this is a call for the perseverance of saints, and they overcame the enemy by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of their testimony, because they didn't love their lives unto death, and they followed in the way of the Lamb. And there's something about that and its centrality. That means even if I don't understand a couple of the plague things and the pit demons, I still know that a self-giving, sacrificial lambness is the way that I'm supposed to persevere forward and endure forward. And I think that is a really nice, clear, central thing, following in the way of the Lamb, persevering in the way of the Lamb. It really is. I don't think we're reading it into the text. It really is there. Like John just stops the discussion of the beast in chapter 13 and goes, this is a call for the perseverance of the saints. He does it again in 14. And so that idea of endurance, I, John, your brother and your fellow partaker in the kingdom and the tribulation and the perseverance that are in Jesus, that's what we're doing here, is we're trying to endure well.
Well, and connected to that is at the end of the passage that Jason preached on, did a great job last week, on Revelation 19, the first nine verses. The verse he didn't cover, and I was kind of glad because I'm going to put it into this week's message, was 19:10, where it says, the testimony of Jesus is the essence of prophecy. And you think about that. I mean, you can turn that around. You can say the essence of prophecy is to give a clear witness of Jesus. And just exactly what you said, like the crucified lamb, to put him on display, that's the essence of prophecy. Yeah. It's not, it doesn't say the essence of prophecy is a good end time chart. It says the essence of prophecy is a clear testimony about Jesus, of who he is, what he's come to do in his first coming, what he will do in his second coming and when he returns.
And the broadest definition, I think, the healthiest definition of prophecy in the whole Bible, and there's tons of sub-definition, is God's truth to God's people directly. Mm-hmm. And Jesus is the way and the truth and the life to and for God's people directly.
Yeah.
So
Jesus is God's truth directly.
Yes, absolutely, directly. Yeah, yeah. And so when it says that line in Revelation 19:10, the prophecy there is not a magic eight ball,
correct,
pray, close your eyes, and hope for a detail about the future. It's talking about what God has clearly revealed. That's the prophetic thing and not some futuristic thing. And so I love
that. Well, that's what the angel says right there in verse 9. Read verse 9 there.
Yeah, and the angel said to me, write this, blessed are those who are invited to the marriage supper of the Lamb. And he said to me, these are the true words of God.
Yeah. And so it's the testimony of Jesus that we bear, and he wants us to hold fast to all through the book of Revelation. That's the faithful discipleship that we're trying to bring out in this time. This time, as we're going through Revelation, because one of the things I reminded people of was in 2003, we preached through the book of Revelation 10 messages, and we just simply looked at, since it's the revelation of Jesus Christ, what does the book of Revelation teach us about Jesus? And that's a proper way of studying, because that's core to what John is saying in the book of Revelation. This time, we're going through the book of Revelation, and we certainly are not letting go of the clear testimony of Jesus that John gives. But we're approaching it from a little bit different angle. Another core emphasis that he has in the book is, what does it look like to be a faithful disciple in the midst of a world system that's trying to suck you in or take you down? And this is a world system that is currently under the judgment of God, but will one day fall under the judgment of God. Mm-hmm. So it's coming down. And so what does it look like to be faithful with that in the present, with that future hope that the enemy in all of his ugly forms is going to be one day done away with?
All right. That's right.
Yes.
Well, I know that this is a kind of a wrap-up Revelation. So, like, we want these themes to be what echo in people's ears. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we don't want to focus on a lot of the confusing questions. But if I feel like we're in the middle, so I could ask one burning question that I have. Like, as a normal man going through and listening to the to the messages.
And who is this man? Normal?
Got him.
This guy. Okay. As a somewhat normal man.
There you go.
The middle, the trumpet, seals, bowls. I can't remember if that's the right order.
But seals, trumpets, bowls.
Seals, trumpets, bowls. The talking about them, that they were different perspectives of the same things, that was new for me because I haven't studied Revelation in a long time. And so even I know we only got a week on each one of those, and I would listen and try to reconcile that in my mind. And I guess my more logical mind couldn't make the metaphors make sense of like, okay, well, these two first judgments, they seem totally different than how they're described here and here. So how is it the same events layered over top of each other? And so I guess the bigger question is like, some things in Revelation seem so pictures, metaphors, images, but they're so specific. Like when we get to the two witnesses, there's just very specific things about how long they did this and the abilities that they're able to do. And then they die, but they're raised after this many days. And like, so how do we know when we're supposed to obviously read a metaphor and a picture into something? And then when it's like so detailed that it's like, is that concrete? Does that question make sense?
Yeah.
Like,
no,
I think the witnesses was the one where I was really kind of tripped up, as I understand we talked about being referring to the church and its witness, but why are there two, and why do they have all these things described about them? So
yeah, that's my question. I think, first of all, it's a fabulous question for
a
somewhat normal man. And I think one of the funny things about that is it goes back to our symbolism discussion and literalism, symbolism discussion. And the reality is, just in the Hebrew brain back in the day, when it came down to writing stuff down, you didn't put stuff in chronological order or a neat logical rational order. Let's take a completely different book, Lamentations. Lamentations is five.
The subject, Jim.
Oh, watch me. I'll change it.
Okay.
Is five sets of, or five chapters, and it's seven sets of 22. Well, what in the Moses is that about, Jim? Well, 22 is the number of letters in the Hebrew alphabet. And the point of the book is the dead center set of sevens, which says, "Great is thy faithfulness, thy mercies are new every morning." And then the rest of it is, "Oh, woe is me, this is terrible." So the point of the thing is a central thing and not an ending thing. So our brains work beginning to end, put the good stuff, the real stuff, the true stuff at the end. Revelation is working from a Hebrew worldview, and it has different order and literary structure and flow, and it's really artistic and creative, so that when you get to seals in 6 through 8, trumpets in 8 through 11, and bowls in 15 through 16, each one of them is a pattern of seven, and there's a break in between 6 and 7, and in between that break, you find two of something. And two in a Hebrew worldview is the way that you needed something to bear witness, two people in the court of law, two ladies at the tomb to witness to the resurrection. So the pattern of that couple, that couplet in between 6 and 7 seals and 6 and 7 trumpets and 6 and 7 bowls, the pattern is a couplet of God's people bearing witness to something, to the point where those two witnesses in chapter 11 experience a kind of resurrection, meaning there is life after the slainness of God's people, and that life is to bear witness to the ultimate life. So there are patterns there, and the first four in each of the seals, trumpets, and bowls seem to follow a plague pattern like the Exodus account, which is what Charlie mentioned, that the world system, i.e. old Egypt and Babylon, etc., the world system will have a decreation unraveling because of the triumph of the Lamb. And then in the fifth seal, trumpet, and bowl, you see kind of the people of God there needing to persevere. And the seals, like we talked about, are from the church's perspective. The trumpets, like we mentioned, is from the perspective of the deserved justice and judgment coming upon the world system. And the bowls, all seven, are from the divine perspective of divine justice is actually a good thing in some way. And so there is art and literary movement.
There's something else there too, like in the sixth seal, sixth trumpet, sixth bowl.
Yeah.
They read very similarly as the final cataclysm.
Yes. And
so like, in this series, like go into your question, like why are they not chronological? Now there's an intensification in looking at this thing from different angles. No question about that. There is an intensification. But if it was chronological, why would each set of sevens end with the final cataclysm? Yep. Cataclysm. And so that is the most convincing thing to me, that I do think there are some things in Revelation that are chronological. like my personal view, when we get to 19, 20, 21, 22, that there's a sequence of events that happen, and whether you're pre-mill or on-mill, most people will recognize that as a sequence
and
of
events.
And even
that 17 through 22, with Babylon,
like yes,
falling,
yes.
There is a decisive.
From 17 to 22, yeah. It seems to be a chronological sequence. But in the middle of the book, we know that the dragon and the child and the woman in Revelation 12, well, that precedes everything. You know, so that's out of chronological order. Mm-hmm. But the thing that convinces me that the seals, trumpets, and bowls are angles of looking at how God's judgments are poured out on the world is that sixth in each set of seven that shows the end of all things. I don't know how can you have the end and then you have seven more things,
new segment.
It just doesn't make sense.
The three different perspectives helps me, but also the deeper you go into each seal, trumpet, bowl, it's almost like the camera zooms in a little bit more on each one. Mm-hmm. So like, it's not just church perspective, world perspective, heavenly perspective. I think, like, let's just say you're looking at a picture from each one of those, you zoom in closer and closer to the final decisive thing by the sixth and then the seventh in each one of those. But still, for the normal man and even the pastor man, it's still confusing. The language, the imagery is still confounding at points there.
Yeah, the big questions are, you know, when you come to Revelation is what's chronological, what's not, and what's symbolic and what's not. Mm-hmm. And there's just no easy answer to that. And that's why the best way of reading Revelation is to look big picture at the big ideas of the book. And then once you have those in place, then come down and begin to look at symbolism. What word, look in the Old Testament. Are there references to that in the Old Testament? Bring it forward. Mm. And but when I'm convinced that when John says, if you read this book or you listen to this book, there's a blessing there for you. Mm-hmm. He's talking about this picturesque imagery of God's triumph over evil and God's people with him in that triumph forever.
Yeah.
And that would have been encouraging to Christians in John's day and in other times in church history where they're taking it on the chin from oppressive governments that are trying to stamp them out. And again, in all those periods of history when the world is trying to suck them in and dilute the faith. I mean, that's what Jesus is talking about with the church, the seven churches in the first two or three chapters, but chapters two and three specifically. He's commending churches and he's correcting churches because there's a pull away from faithfulness. I don't think that emphasis is lost in the rest of the book.
That's good.
Yeah, even the word read there in the opening paragraph, we think of reads as saying, read as say words out loud. And the word in the original is anagnosko. It's a knowing word, knowing something, like experiencing the thing. So in our literate world, read is just like, I read the words on the page.
Yeah.
That's not, read the words of this prophecy mean embody them, to be lamb-like, to follow his way. And so that's where the blessing is to be lamb-like and follow the way.
Yeah. One of the things too we talked about last night, and this is so important. I think the beauty and the brilliance of Revelation written in apocalyptic language, in symbolic language, allows for Christians in whatever time they live in to be able to read Revelation through the specific events of their time. In other words, John wrote in 96 AD, and there had been Nero, and the Christian persecution had begun. And then there was a successive series of Caesars where persecution grew more intense. And Christians living in the first 300 years, like there was lots of persecution there. So the question is, had Jesus come back in 221, would the book of Revelation have been fulfilled? And the answer to that in my mind, is yes. In the 1500s, Martin Luther read Revelation, and he saw the Pope as the Antichrist. And the Roman church is the beast. And he read Revelation through the corrupt religious system of his day. If Jesus came back in 1600, could we say that everything that was imaged in Revelation had been fulfilled? Yes. But again, that's the brilliance of and the beauty of the book. The call to keep your eyes focused on he who is on the throne, the call to follow him faithfully when the world is trying to pull you down or take you out, that call is just as valid no matter what period of Christian history you live in. And I think one of the dangers of more recent end time prophecy and timelines and all that kind of thing, one of the dangers is that it makes you think that there are still things that have to happen before Jesus can come back. Like I've heard, and this isn't true of all end time prophecies and that kind of thing, but there are branches that say, oh yeah, they got the red heifers already in stables in Israel, and they've got all the building materials together to rebuild the temple, and soon as the Jews take the Temple Mount back from the Muslims, they're going to tear that mosque down and build the temple and start offering sacrifices and the red heifers and all this kind of thing, and then Jesus can come back. It's like, no. Nobody
on a cloudy day.
On a cloudy day.
Riding on the clouds.
But clearly, Paul, John, right after Jesus' resurrection and before he goes and is ascended back into heaven, everybody's asking, is now the time? Is this when you're going to set up the kingdom? And the call of the New Testament is live every day as if Jesus could come today. So there's not anything on the prophetic calendar, whether you lived in 221 or 1500 or 1948 or 1972 with late great, you know, or 2024, there's nothing that has to be fulfilled in order for Jesus to come back. But the symbolism in Revelation allows you to see the corrupt world system and the corrupt world and godless religious leaders or whatever at any time in church history, and it would all be true. I don't know of any other book that's quite like that.
Yeah, and one of the illustrations we did last night was like, Paul says he has a thorn in the flesh. If he said, I struggle with pornography somehow in the first century, if he said the struggle, there would be people who wouldn't relate to it. Mm-hmm. Similarly, yeah. If John goes, man, Rome, what a bunch of jerks. They're the worst politicians ever. We would go, well, I don't live in Rome. No big deal. Mm-hmm. But he uses that language from the Old Testament to go, this is just empire. Mm-hmm. This is just the state unhinged. And so we all live under that in some way. And so we're called to recognize when it becomes Babylonian and beastly and dragon-like so as to respond the way of the meek beast, the lamb. And so I think, like you just said, therein lies the brilliance of it. What do you think – here's a question. What do you think are questions that people still have, dominant questions that people still have about Revelation? Mm-hmm. Normal man questions, pastor man questions.
Well, one of the things you hit on was in our talking about the symbolism and the imagery of Revelation, people have questioned, "What are you really taking the book literally?" Like I thought we believed in literal interpretation. And you know, going back to your thorn thing, when we read about Paul saying he had a thorn in his flesh, if we'll take that literally, it means that he had something stuck in his flesh that maybe it got infected. I don't know. You know, like, but everybody understands that a thorn in the flesh is a metaphor for a reality of something that was causing him to be weak.
And he's also smart, and that's Genesis 3. He's not random. He's doing biblical narrative imagery. Mm-hmm. He's not like, He didn't say I stubbed my toe. We all have a stubbed toe.
Right.
It's Genesis 3. There's something wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even in my body. And that's what Revelation's doing when it's saying clouds or lamb or two witnesses. It's recalling imagery from the Hebrew Bible. And we just, I mean, here's the best way to learn to read Revelation. Go spend the next 10 years reading your Old Testament. And dude, I mean, seriously, we want to watch the news and go, this is what Revelation is talking about. Please stop. Stop yesterday. Read the Hebrew Bible. Ask more questions than you can ever come up with. And then patiently steep in Revelation. And I think we'll start to get it. But we go, I can't even spell Habakkuk, so I'm done. Like, that's the posture of people. And I hate sounding like that pastor guy, read your Bible more. But, dude, if you want to understand Revelation, I promise CNN and Fox are not helping. I promise. But I do promise that Isaiah will. And I promise that Exodus will. Mm-hmm. And those were written too long ago. So I'll stick with trying to let CNN and Fox help me with my interpretation. And that's just not the move. That's not the play. And so that, I'm with you, man. The patient going, there is a beautiful artistic method to the symbolism, and it's not random, and it's not allegory. I love that we delineated that last night. I thought that was really helpful and hopefully encouraging. I feel like the more I've studied the Old Testament, the more Revelation has been more beautiful to me.
Yeah.
And so I don't like that answer, but that is part of the answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I also said last night was to read the Bible literally, you have to read symbolism to understand the literal meaning. In other words, if Jesus, and this doesn't require Old Testament here, it's just plain metaphor. When Jesus says, go tell Herod that fox, nobody is thinking that Herod has been reduced like Nebuchadnezzar was to a beast and he now looks like a fox, foxy face and all this kind.
That'd be cool, though.
So if you took a literal reading of that, you would have to go, Herod, what, did Herod become like a little fox? No, everybody knows fox. Even in that day, fox was wily, shrewd, cunning, manipulative, deceptive. Those kinds of things are associated with the fox. Sorry to people who love little foxes with those bushy tails and everything. But you cannot read the Bible literally and not look below the symbols and the imagery. You just can't do it. Mm-hmm. Like, literal means taking symbolic language and understanding the literal reality behind the symbol, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and we talked that.
And it's hard. And again, it's hard. Like, what do we take as symbol? What do we take as fact, you know?
But we still talk that way, like, oh, dude, that house costs $1 million. No, that's just a big number you use. And, like, we still talk that way.
And we know what we're talking about.
And nobody goes, literal million? Like,
right.
We know. All right, I'm gonna gear shift. One of the things that I've loved about Revelation is so many good Revelation songs, like Worthy of It All, singing Holy, Holy, singing that Forever song. What's the one you guys did? Oh, We Will Feast, so lovely with Revelation 19. So I love all of the, I mean, practically for our gathered services, the fact that so many songs just come right out of that. So what's one that you have loved coming out of Revelation?
I have enjoyed this summer focusing on, I think we've talked about them a lot as Colossians 3 songs and worship, just setting our mind on things above. And one of the distinct moments was when we did a really contemplative ballad before the message called One Day, that just reminds us of what one day we will be changed at that. That kind of got to me in that moment. You said, I got. I remember
you
that.
You got. You cried, and I cried because you cried. I remember that.
It was moving. I just was like, yeah, we're tired of Babylon. We're tired of how it feels here. We're tired of all the limitations. We look forward to that peace one day. So.
And so, obviously that was most perfectly celebrated in Bluegrass Sunday, which was also a delight, you know?
Yeah, but it was fun. So,
well, we've totally enjoyed this series. Everything from the teachers have, and the music's been delightful. Even our Revelation bonus night, And we hope you guys continue to have questions. We think that means you're reading the Bible correctly. Mm-hmm. But thank you guys for joining with us for Revelation Summer Fun. Thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
The Jesus on Display podcast is produced right here at Fellowship Greenville in Greenville, South Carolina. Thanks so much again for listening to today's episode. Follow and share this podcast with anybody who might be interested or curious about our church community or how storytelling unites us and helps us feel more connected. To actively keep up with what's going on at our church, head to our website at fellowshipgreenville.org, follow us on all social media platforms, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Thank you again so much for tuning in. Grace and peace for your week. We'll see you next time.